This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dave Woodard in for Libby today. Jane Brown will be hosting tomorrow as Libby takes some well-deserved time off. We're taking your phone calls on what you think it means to be Canadian. Sam in Brantford.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad. Good. Oh, I'm proud to be Canadian. I came over from Italy in 1951. But I find that a lot of people who have come here over the years since I've been in Canada, they don't embrace Canada 100%. They complain about the court system. They complain about being legions to the Queen, singing the national anthem at school or whatever. I embrace Canada 100%. I fly the Canadian flag on my trailer, and I'm very proud of it.
Now, I find that you make some great points, Sam, but I also find that a lot of people that are making those, you know, complaints are, you know, people who have been here for, you know, generations upon generations. Do you find that some, you know, I use it as an example. We talk about the national anthem and changing the words to the national anthem, which isn't happening, by the way.
Exactly.
But do we... A lot of those people have been Canadians, you know, for generations. Is it one of those things that we as Canadians are kind of, you know, looking at other people who are coming in with a different set of eyes? We're thinking, well, maybe they're not going to appreciate it as much, so we need to change?
I don't think we have to change. I think they have to accommodate the new way of doing things and embrace Canada because we are embracing them. They should be embracing us.
Gotcha.
I'm very proud to be a Canadian. I love my Italian heritage, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But I fly, I have two flags in my house. I have the Italian flag and I have the Canadian flag. And also, I find that tradition is great,
mm-hmm.
but don't forget how beautiful Canada is and how we treat them.
Absolutely. Sam, thanks for the call. Appreciate
it. Okay, bye-bye.
So I want to get into kind of food here. What do you think is the quintessential Canadian dish? Poutine, tortillere, or just, you know, wild Atlantic or Pacific salmon. What about whale blubber or caribou? It's not an easy question to answer given the vastness of this country, but it's one that friends Lindsay Anderson and Dana Van Veller set to find out when they decided to drive from coast to coast to coast to find the Canadian cuisine. They started a blog called theediblerodtrip.com, and earlier this year, they published a cookbook called Feast. Dana joins me now to talk about their experiences. Dana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so the book is called Feast. How did you and your co-author, Lindsay Anderson, meet?
We actually met in 2011 in the Okanagan, and we actually met on Canada Day, which is a funny
coincidence? Yeah.
So Lindsay was actually working for tree planters up in northern BC, and I was living in Vancouver at the time, and we were both traveling to this tiny music festival in Kelowna that friends of mine were putting on, and mm-hmm. I had a bunch of mutual friends that I went to university with that she was cooking for. So when we kind of all got there, they were all like, you have to meet Lindsay, like you're going to love her. And I did. Then we became friends. She moved to Vancouver a couple of months later, and it went from there.
Wow. Okay. So The idea of this is that basically going across the country, looking for different regional cuisines. But from the beginning, it kind of sounds like, you know, a couple of people hanging around a campfire, drinking some wine, and getting the idea of, you know, I want to go across country. Is that how it kind of went down?
Yeah, sort of. We were camping and we were lounging on this fallen log in the river and drinking a beer and eating chips in the sun. It was during the day, and it was just kind of one of those conversations where you cover a lot of ground, and we started talking about Canadian food and how kind of came out of it like we're two Canadian women who've grown up in different parts of the country. I'm from Ontario and went to school in New Brunswick, and Lindsay's lived in both all over BC and in Alberta. And we were just kind of like, okay, we've got like different areas of the country covered, but we still don't feel like we can come together and kind of confidently say like what Canadian food is. And
right.
And so we were kind of like, well, what if we specifically went to all 10 provinces and all three territories with the sole intent of finding and sharing interesting food stories, and then kind of what better way to do that than in a car?
Mm-hmm.
If we're thinking about finances and
yeah, of course,
you know. Yeah.
So that's where the 37,000 kilometer trek began.
Where it began.
How did you decide where to go first?
It was a variety of different ways. We researched for about 8 months for the trip, like kind of funding options and all kinds of different things. And itinerary was one of them. And we kind of decided like, okay, these are the dates that will be in each province. Because we'd have to set those. Otherwise, you know, we probably would have never left the Yukon.
Right.
And so it was like, okay, these are the dates. And like, here's some things that we want to do. Like, who are our friends? And like, what do they know? Like, we've both worked in the food industry a lot, so we had connections already. And then it was also kind of like people would write us through our website and say, like, if you go through this place, then you have to stop by here. Or if you're coming this way, like, come stay at our house and talk to our friend, or we're farmers, or, you know.
Right.
It was kind of a variety of different ways. We kind of had most of our itinerary set up, maybe about 50% when we left, and then kind of left it open to those emails and
right.
then things that we'd find once we arrived or, you know.
That in itself, sorry to interrupt, that in itself have been incredibly overwhelming, because I know if I ask, you know, on my social media pages where I should go for brunch, I get about 15 responses right away. So how did you decide which ones you should go to and which ones you shouldn't?
Well, we had spreadsheets, like multiple spreadsheets, because sometimes people would find out about the trip while we were in the Yukon and they're over in Nova Scotia and they're like giving us a recommendation. So we're like, okay, we need a way to like remember these recommendations
right.
rather than like, you know, get them just staying in our inbox. So that was kind of one way. And then like once we'd get to an area, we'd be like, okay, these were all our recommendations, like quick Googles, like let's talk about this. What do we want to do? And then, yeah, you just kind of have to like, you can't be everywhere. So you just have to choose.
Right. Now you started out as food bloggers on this trip. It's called ediblerodtrip.com. Did you ever have the idea that you wanted to write a book eventually?
We did. It was like way kind of in the back of our heads. It was like the initial goal was kind of like, okay, let's get this road trip done. Let's come back in one piece. Let's still be friends. And then we'll see what we can do with it. We did when we did our fundraising video, one of the perks was that you would get a free feast cookbook if you donated a certain amount, which was hilarious. It was something we just added like at the end when, you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah.
Okay, let's publish this. Wait, let's make one more perk and let's make it a cookbook. And then someone bought it and we were like, I think on social media, we're like, I guess we're writing a cookbook. And then, you know, we laugh at that now because like we had no idea that a cookbook was like a 2.5 year commitment and like,
right.
And just, so much work. But I mean, so it was on our minds. It was not something we were working towards at all on the trip. It was kind of just like we were just putting our heads down trying to get the project itself done. So it was a very happy happy thing that happened afterwards.
Absolutely. Now, whale blubber, what's that like?
Yeah.
You ate whale blubber where?
In Rankin Inlet in Nunavut.
Okay.
So we actually had it two different times. We had it as muktuk, and that's like the skin and blubber of a raw skin and blubber of a whale. We actually had narwhal, It was really good. It was more chewy than flavorful. Like it was chewy,
okay.
And it had kind of like a mild sweet kind of oceany flavor, and so it was also dipped in China lily soy sauce, which is how it was served to us. So then it was also a bit salty. So it was really, really good. We actually had several pieces of that. The second way we had it was fermented, and the way that we ate that was we had a frozen cube of raw caribou.
Okay.
And then we dipped it in this fermented whale fat that it was kind of like a gel-like sauce. And it was super, I mean, as many
really?
Fermented foods are, it was super, super strong. Like,
yeah,
kind of like the pungency of like blue cheese, but
oh, okay.
but quite a bit more. It was, yeah, it was that one we didn't necessarily think, I want to eat more of that. But it was also the type of thing that, like, you know, if you've grown up with that your entire life, you could also see how that would be just a flavor that you crave.
Sure. Now, yeah. It sounds like both you and Lindsay are very open-minded when it comes to trying food, but was there anything that you were intimidated by in terms of food?
Intimidated by? I would say probably when we were in Nunavut. Like, we were definitely game to try everything, but
right.
In Nunavut, the food culture is so... It's emotionally important, you know, like caribou and whale and all of that. Like, it's just very important food for their culture, in a way that's different than food is important to us down south. So it was intimidating to come into that food culture and feel like, you know, like, I want to represent this connection to their food, to the food, really well in my writing. And I also want to experience it and, you know, and talk to people. So that was probably the most, like, you know, like, I want to respect this.
Sure.
This connection.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If you could say which was the strangest food that you tried, what would it be?
I think I would have to say, have you heard of the sourdough cocktail in Dauphiné?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
For the listeners who don't know what it is, do you want to explain it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So it's this, it started off as a preserved miner's toe. It's an actual human toe.
Yeah.
And the various toes have gone missing throughout the year. I think there's been like somewhere between 5 and 10 toes donated to keep this tradition going. But you can go to the downtown hotel in Dauphin City, and you can join the Sour Toe Cocktail Club by getting this human toe that's like kind of blackened and preserved with salt. It's toenail still intact, dropped into your glass, and you've got to sip it. You've got to let the toe touch your lips in order to get into the club.
That's right. So, yeah. So that was that was probably the strangest experience.
I mean, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, how can you get a little bit more strange than that? I think.
Yeah.
And I think actually right now there is one missing. So
yeah,
there's a toe that's
it was returned.
Oh, that's good to hear. Excellent. What was the most Canadian experience you had?
I mean, there were so, it's hard to say because, like, the Canadian, I mean, the whole Canadian food experience is, like, it's defined by being so diverse and so regional.
Right.
But one memory that I can point to is we were at the Roots Rants and Roars Festival in Elliston, Newfoundland, the eastern side.
Right.
And they have this festival where it's they've got cod wars, so 8 different chefs kind of battle it out with a cod dish, and then someone's named king or queen of cod. And then the next day there's a food hike, and 5 more chefs have set up stations all along this amazing rugged coastline. So that night there was also something called the feast, and there's, you know, 8 chefs again preparing courses for this meal. And the one that's actually in our book, it was this maple and molasses braised pork belly, and it was served with a roasted fig and tomato ketchup, and then like a turnip and corn puree on the side. So it was very like just like very classic Canadian ingredients, and then kind of combined in a way that you know that it is familiar and also new. So.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
That sounds very interesting. And now, I guess the $64,000 question that everybody wants to know, is there a Canadian cuisine?
Yes, but I think that it's also like maybe a less satisfying answer because I don't think that you can package it up into like 1 or 2 dishes. I think that if you do that, it just ignores the diversity and regionality of the country. So we kind of, the way that we kind of talk about it is that it's very ingredient-based. It's very seasonally based. You kind of, you know, you can kind of think like, okay, what do I usually eat in July versus what I usually eat in January?
Mm-hmm.
It's hugely influenced by both First Nations cuisines and immigrant cuisines. And then that's kind of always changing too. And it changes from region to region based on, you know, who was there and who's coming there. And that's, you know, that changes. Or that's historically different as well.
Right.
And then just like a lot of like wild foods and foods from like land and sea. So it's, yeah.
So there's like, go ahead.
Oh no, there's like a few kind of dishes that have become more popular in certain areas, but I think that it's also just hugely regional and still in need of more exploration.
Dana Van Veller, author of the cookbook Feast, or co-author of the cookbook Feast, and one of the people behind EdibleRoadTrip.com. It's a food blog that you can check out. Thank you so much for joining me. I know my kids are really enjoying trying all the recipes that I'm making them try. Thank you for joining me today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Take care. 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We're taking your calls as well on what it means to be Canadian. Sandra in Toronto has been holding for a while. Sandra, what does it mean to you to be Canadian?
Well, good afternoon. And
good afternoon.
I just wanted to say I was really impressed by that young lady you just interviewed. I don't know if it was on, you know, on tape, on reel, but it was a wonderful interview. She seemed really insightful about her subject. Now, for Canadian, I think a lot of people who are Canadian or who live in this land, a lot of them probably have a brand. It's hard to brand Canadians because, mm-hmm. in my experience and from my observations, we're not embracing the good with the bad. There is a dark history of Canada. If you look at, you know, across the border,
sure.
down further south, they're embracing their dark past along with their, you know, the current past. I mean, the current present.
Right.
We are not embracing our past. If we embraced our past, our dark history, it would give us roots, and we could come to an understanding and acknowledgement. Okay, this is what it means to be Canadian.
Interesting.
I mean, like even the symbols, the icons, the, you know, the things that are put out there, the loonie and such. If we were to intersperse in there, you know, perhaps, you know, a dream catcher,
right?
Perhaps a totem pole. A teepee. I mean, if they were on our currency, that would help a bit. That would say, hey, we're embracing our past. This is where we've been, and this is where we're going. As you know and I know, this country is not 150 years old.
No.
We're much, much older than that. I mean, contacts happened, 524 years ago? And it's from that point of contact that the formation of Canada, or what would soon be contemporary Canada, began.
Right. Sandra, thanks for your call. It's something very... very important to remember. Thanks a lot, Sandra.
Thank you.
Mimi in Nestleton, what did you want to say? Hi, Mimi.
Oh, hi.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you
very much.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What did you want to say?
Well, actually, the lady who just spoke fed right into one of the things that I have on my mind.
Okay.
As I mentioned to the very nice lady who answered the phone, I'm new in Canada. I've only been here for a year, although my contact with Canada goes back to the late 1970s. I believe that Canada is a remarkable country, in my view, one of the finest in the world. I also feel that I hope no one will rest on their laurels.
Right.
There, as this lady was saying, there it's not perfect. And perfection is, I don't think, within our grasp, no matter where you live in the world. But aspiring to it is extremely important. And I believe that until Canada makes peace with their past, especially as this connects with the Aboriginal history, I think that that is absolutely vital to perfecting as far as possible an already really wonderful country.
Mimi, I couldn't have put it better myself. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
And we'll take one more phone call just before we go to break. Neil in Oakville, you wanted to say something about being Canadian.
Well, that's right. I worked at Sam's and A&A's downtown Toronto in the 70s.
Nice.
And it was unbelievable.
I bet.
You really felt like you were a part of something. And when those stores shut down, it was Sam's especially, but A&A's was owned by Americans. Mm-hmm. But when Sam's shut down, that I felt we really lost something. And we're losing so many retailers, Canadian retailers. I feel we're kind of losing a bit of Canada.
I see. So do you think that there is a place for Canada, especially, I mean, retail to some degree, just in general, is not as good as it used to be, is not as strong as it used to be. Do you think there's a place for Canada going forward in maybe kind of, you know, ushering a new era of, say, you know, like online or a different type of sales that we haven't really figured out yet?
I wish I could answer that question, but I can't.
Neil, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Okie
doke. Take care.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.